Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Arvida Group Limited conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Bill McDonald, CEO of Arvida Group. Please go ahead.
Morning, everybody, and thanks for joining us this morning for our interim results report. It's been a really good period for us once again, with underlying profit up 29% to $12.4 million. Up 29% on the prior corresponding period, so we're very pleased about that. A little earlier in the year, we announced the acquisition of three further villages, which was a key highlight for us during the period, which settled on the 13th of October. On the back of that acquisition, we raised $77 million for a rights issue and issued $16 million of scrip to the vendors, being Hearst Lifecare. We're also moving along very strongly with our development activity, with over 500 units and beds now resource consented out of our pipeline of 1,036, with an expected 94 units to be delivered in the second half of this financial year. We've seen strong demand for our care business, with occupancy now around the 96% mark, which we're very pleased about. And our care fees made up around 70% of our total revenue. We retain a very positive outlook towards the future. We expect to maintain our earnings momentum, and we've announced a dividend of 1.15 cents per share for the September quarter. With the acquisition of the Hearst villages, our snapshot of Arvida looks something like 1,750 aged care beds and 1,752 retirement units, making up a total of 3,500 beds and units in our portfolio. If you look at our development pipeline of over 1,000 units, that puts us around 4,500 units in total once we've completed that rollout over the next several years. When you look at our portfolio now, our aged care composition is around that 50% mark, and looking a little more closely, our needs-based composition is still around that 70% mark. So that's where we like to be, and as you can see, if you're looking at our slide there, you can see our coverage across New Zealand is now quite extensive, with our acquisition strategy enabling us to transfer our footprint relatively quickly. Our stated strategy remains consistent. We're still very focused on advancing our wellbeing program across our retirement and aged care business. We've got a real focus there, and our vision is still to improve the lives and wellbeing of our residents by transforming the ageing experience. Development is still something which we're very focused on. We've got multiple brownfield projects underway, which I'll speak a little more about in a minute. We also, of course, have our first greenfield project, which we acquired earlier in the year in Richmond in the Nelson Tasman region. That's a very exciting project for us, and we're looking forward to that rollout in the next financial year. Acquisition still remains quite valid for us as we continue to see opportunities out there, and we're very pleased to bring in the three large Hearst life care villages in October. We're also seeing the advancement of our continuum of care model as we roll out care into our straight retirement villages, being Coppercrest and Laurison Park. We're well underway with planning there for further care suites and apartments in those two villages. Operational highlights for the period, I think where the key for us has been our continual advancement of our occupancy, moving to 96% over the last couple of months. We're very pleased about that, and we think that it really underpins the service offering that we're now undertaking. We've got two further facilities that have achieved 4-year certification over the period, which we think is a key indicator towards the quality of our service, which makes up about a third of our villages that have now achieved that gold standard certification periods. We've also continued the rollout of our resident management system, which has been a great initiative. It enables us to have greater insight into the operations with better reporting and better ability to benchmark. I've also introduced the aged care channel to our facilities, which is a video-based training program, which we think is going to save us a lot of money in our training area and also enable very immediate access to our training resources for our teams. The attitude of living well, as we term our wellness program, is continuing to roll out across the group as we engage with our more resident-led systems and roll out our household model across the group. That's creating some real advantages for us as we differentiate our product against the sector. So a little more detail on the acquired villages. Mary Doyle was acquired in Havelock North. It's a large village with an additional 42 villas to be built over the next couple of years. Strathallan, which is a very good village in Timaru, a strong reputation there, fully developed, but has a great care facility there that's been operating at around the 100% mark for a number of years now. And a village at the park, which is in Wellington. 24 apartments have just been completed there in November with strong pre-sales there. I think they're pretty much all gone now. In fact, that was 28 apartments that have now been completed, with a further 24 apartments and 16 villas to be built over the next couple of years. The integration of those facilities is proceeding exceptionally well. We're very pleased with the teams there and how they have integrated into the greater Arvida team. So the acquisitions are made up of 306 care beds and 451 retirement units, so quite a meaningful bolt-on acquisition to the group. As I said earlier, the development program is on track and going along very well, with the expected delivery of a total of 94 units over the second half of this financial year, with expected new settlements of around 70 of those delivered units in the second half of the year. We've had a really successful pre-sale program at a number of our villages over the period, including Park Lane, Village of the Park, Coppercrest, Lauriston Park and Oakwoods. So very pleased with the demand for our new product. The first new villas and units at Oakwoods, Village of the Park and Lauriston Park were delivered in October, with Aria Bay and Park Lane developments to be delivered probably just after the end of this financial year. We've also commenced master planning of our site at Richmond, which is very exciting for the team. And we've secured resource consent for our care facility at Coppercrest that will be made up of around 40 care suites and 30-odd apartments. So it's likely that we'll move into the build in FY19. I might now hand over to Jeremy to run through our financial results.
Morning, everybody. So in terms of the income statement on page 13 of the pack, key drivers have been the increased number of villages contributing to a full six-month result. We've completed a desktop revaluation of the investment property portfolio at 30 September, which resulted in an $8.9 million unrealised gain. That gain was largely driven by villages that we acquired within the last 12 months, as our pricing strategy has resulted in higher unit prices and therefore increases in investment property valuations. The valuation assumptions used by CBRE are generally very consistent with those at 31 March, obviously apart from updated ingoing unit prices. Overall, we saw a net profit after tax of $14.5 million compared to $19.4 million in the prior period. Obviously, the big difference there is the change in investment, fair value of investment property, which was $6 million less than the prior period. In terms of our underlying profit on page 14, increased from $9.6 million to $12.4 million. We've seen an increase in the underlying profit cents per share from 3.46 to 3.69, which is a 7% increase. We will see that further increase in the second half of the year. Resale gains are generally seasonally weighted towards the second half of the year. And as Bill discussed, we are expecting to settle around 70 of those 94 new units in the second half. Currently to date, in the second half, we've settled 20 new units since the 1st of October. Six at Oakwood, six at Lauriston, seven at Village of the Park and one at Coppercrest. That's provided proceeds of around $11 million. We've also settled the resales of around 35 units since 1 October, which again has pulled in another $12 million of gross proceeds. As you can see from the earnings bridge, the main contributor to the increase in underlying profit was the acquired villages. They delivered a $2.6 million underlying profit result. In terms of sales, the first half we saw 98 resales and three new sales. Pleasing to see the margin increase on the resales from 15% in the prior corresponding period to 19%. And we expect that trend to continue. The resales so far in the second half of the year have been at an average 22% margin. In terms of our embedded value calculations, slight increase along with the increase in the unit pricing, so $126,000 embedded value per unit, up from $117,000 at year end and up from $92,000 in the prior corresponding period. Split roughly half and half between DMF and resale gains, which just gives us a little bit of insulation in case there is any softening in the property markets. So that embedded value from the DMF is obviously all contractually owed to us at the current point in time. In terms of the balance sheet on page 17, total assets have grown to just under $850 million. We have spent significant amounts on development over the past 6 months. So we've seen an increase in our external debt, along with an increase in our property, plant and equipment line. We are expecting to continue to spend over the next 12 months with an expected total cost of around $55 million. Obviously, that will get offset by settlements of new sales over that period. And our gearing at balance date was around 22%. On page 18, we've just provided a net implied value per share reconciliation. So that value comes in at $1.19. So that's basically taking the CBRE estimate of value for our retirement villages and care facilities, adding in our work in progress pot of around $50 million and taking away the net debt. That's increased by a couple of cents since year end on the back of the revaluations. In terms of cash flow, we delivered $14.5 million of operating cash flow for the 6 months compared to 15.4 in the prior corresponding period. That was, the lower level was largely driven by less new sale proceeds coming through in this 6 months as opposed to the prior 6 months. The difference between the two was about $2.4 million. So if you back that out of the prior period, like for like, you're looking at about a 10% increase. And that is the end of the presentation, so we'll just pass it back to the convener for question time.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Andrew Steele from First NZ Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Just a few questions from me. When I'm looking at the underlying earnings bridge that you provide, could you give some sense as to how this looks if you were to do it on the underlying operating profit, excluding gains on resale and gains on sale of new units, which obviously distorts the picture here?
So core portfolio, a large amount of the increase was driven from higher resale gains, so that will contribute, that will take up most of the core portfolio increase. Of the 2.6 million of acquired villages, I'll need to come back to you on that, Andrew. I just don't have that data in front of me.
Cool. And in terms of the equal pay settlement, or the pay equity settlement, you've had a few months of dealing with that now. There's obviously been recognition of offshore workers' qualifications. Now, are you seeing this as an EBITDA neutral outcome to date?
So what we've seen since 1 July is that the, as you said, the number of qualifications being recognised has increased significantly. So we are paying more than anticipated in employment costs. That is being offset by the roughly 10% increase in funding rates, and also we've had improved occupancy as well. So definitely employment costs are higher than we'd anticipated they would be, based on the preliminary information that was provided in sort of May when the settlement occurred. The industry body, the NZACA, is working with the government parties on reviewing the funding rates to make sure that they are appropriate going forward. And recently they've advised that they were doing a detailed review of providers' income, the employment cost data for the period of 4 months from July through October, and looking to make a one-off transitional payment if that data shows that there has been a diminution in that sort of margin between fees and employment costs.
Okay, great. And I guess also related to wage costs, I assume there'll be some level of impact from the minimum wage increase on, you know, likes of ground staff and cleaners and cooking staff. Could you give some sort of indication as to, you know, the number of full-time equivalent staff currently at minimum wage or referenced to minimum wage?
Yeah, so we've got no one on the minimum wage. We have a policy that we would pay more than the minimum wage. So in 1 April, we put all of the workers who, as you referred to, the, you know, the gardeners and the kitchen hands, et cetera, cleaners, up to $16.50 an hour. Obviously, that is the new minimum wage that comes in next year. We have around 200 full-time equivalents at that level, pre the acquisition villages. So at this stage, $16.50 won't have an impact on us. The decision that we'll need to take is whether we continue with our policy of paying more than the minimum wage going forward, given the government's signalled intention to increase that minimum wage quite rapidly over the next 3 or 4 years.
Okay, great. And just on developments, looking at the pipeline and your indicated phasing of developments, there seem to be a number of delays to some of the projects, I guess in particular Park Lane Stage 2, Roads on Kashmir Stages 2 and 3, Coppercrest Stage 6, and I think Aria as well. I mean, what's the reason for these delays, and I guess also importantly, are there cost increases or cost overruns associated with this delay, with these delays?
Yeah, so the main reason for delays is really the unseasonally wet winter that we've had, which has put delays on projects. For example, roads on Kashmir, you can see the picture at the bottom left on page 11. First part of the construction was to excavate the basement car park. We basically had a swimming pool up there for quite some time. So weather has impacted all of the projects that you've talked about, but there are no cost overruns on any of those projects.
Okay, oh, that's great. And just in terms of, you know, what you're seeing in terms of resales and new sales going, you know, into the second half, in terms of, is there any sort of slowdown that you're seeing coming through in the property market in terms of settlement on units or any pricing pressure starting to come through?
No to all of those. So we haven't really seen any slowdown of demand. We haven't seen any sort of issues with people settling. No, we haven't seen any pressure on pricing either. So relatively, I guess, insulated from any property wobbles at this stage. I guess the main area where the property slowdowns occurred is in Auckland, and we're relatively underweight Auckland. So as you'd expect, you probably have less issues there. Christchurch market, residential market, there has been a lot of supply there in the last sort of couple of years. So that's just a normalised situation down there. And as you can see on the bottom of page 15, we only have around 40 units available for resale currently, so relatively low levels of stock there.
That's great. That's all from me. Thank you, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jeremy Simpson from Forsyth Barr. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys, and yeah, well done on a good, solid result. Just a couple of questions around the care operation. What's sort of happening with premium accommodation charges? Is there a chance to sort of leverage that more with, you know, given your high, you know, very high occupancy? And then also, I guess, related to that, and you've got quite a bit of new care coming up to be built. And yeah, what's your latest thoughts on the use of ORAs, you know, for funding that care?
Jeremy, it's always a balancing act with occupancy versus premium charging. We think that there is an opportunity to increase some of the premium charges across the group, although really for us, maintaining that high level of occupancy is the key. In relation to the new care offering coming forward, pretty much everything that we have flagged is going to be based on ORA Care Suite. So that's what we'll be rolling into Roads on Kashmir, Lauriston Park and Coppercrest as those developments move forward. So certainly everything that we're doing from a care perspective will be ORA-based moving forward.
Great, thanks for that. And just lastly, just on the in terms of the portfolio valuation, I guess it didn't on the revals didn't move much. Is there any sort of additional colour you can sort of comment around that?
Yep. So we do an annual pricing review across the portfolio of the ingoing unit prices. So that work was completed through August and September. So as you'd expect, there's no evidence for the valuer to increase those ingoing unit prices. So for the existing portfolio, you'll see more of an increase coming through in the second half of the financial year when we do the year-end valuations. But we had increased the prices again on the stock that we'd acquired through FY17. So that's why the increase in value is more weighted towards those villages than the existing ones.
Sorry, just confirming that, so you didn't, there wasn't much in the way of evidence or new pricing for the core portfolio during the period?
Yeah, because we only reviewed the pricing in sort of August, September time.
Right,
So we've completed that review. Those new prices are now in action. And as those prices get firmed up and we get some actual resales at those levels, then the valuer will take notice of those new unit prices for the March 18 valuation.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.